Since the dawn of the 21st century, scientific discovery has rushed forward at lightning speed. Genetics, physics, computerized technologies, robotics, virtual reality. Join Derek and Sharon Gilbert as they uncover the truths behind this ultimate scientific deception. Get ready for Sci Friday.
Just what do you think you're doing, Dave? It's time for Sci Friday from Skywatch TV. Welcome, I'm Derek Gilbert. Joining us as always, our science advisor and my best friend sitting closer this week, which is a good thing. The author of the Red Wing Saga, Sharon K. Gilbert.
Hi, sweetie pie. We are in our home today, as you might have guessed. We're not on the set because there are other things going on the set. So we are at home to make sure you do not miss this week's Sci Friday, because next week there will be no Sci Friday because of Thanksgiving. That was from the 2001 series.
Space Odyssey.
He just passed away.
That's why I brought it out. This past Sunday night, November 11th, Douglas Rains passed at the age of 90, who did the character... The creepily calm voice of HAL 9000, not only in that film, but also in the follow-up in Space 2010. Was that...
Yes,
2010, A Space Odyssey.
It was the follow-up.
Yeah, 2001, A Space Odyssey. 2010,
Entirely different film.
Yeah, which, by the way, is streaming now, Space 1999 with Martin Landau.
Oh, you know what? If it were only Martin Landau doing his Bela Lugosi on the moon,
awesome.
That would be so Well, we've got lots to talk about today. We've been continuing this idea of exploring the supernatural realm, and it goes back to Halloween, and we just finished October, of course, and Halloween's... festivities. I won't say celebration. I don't celebrate that. But the question is this week, what does this all go back to? There has to be a point in time when mankind started, having these beliefs and having these festivals, and frankly, the many activities that have become so commonplace. We're all used to it. We all think about Halloween as being the thinning of the veil between the worlds. When did that start?
That's a really good question. Obviously, the rebellion began in Eden with the Nakash, the serpent, trying to convincing Adam and Eve that they could be as gods, which clearly they were familiar with. I mean, the idea that a snake talking didn't freak out Eve somehow never occurs to us when we read that that passage. No, they were in the Garden of God, which was in Ezekiel 28 is described as the seat of the gods, and it's also described as the holy mountain of God. So they were on a mountain. It was a garden, yes, but on a mountain with the gods, the small g Elohim gods, the Elohim, sons of God, and were kicked out. So apparently some of them decided to follow Adam and Eve and the descendants of Adam and Eve to Earth. Where did that rebellion begin? The earliest that we can trace, I think, from the evidence available to us is the summit of Mount Hermon, because there are many rituals that appear to have begun at Mount Hermon. And I have to give you credit for finding the research that kind of ties a few things together.
Because it was writing this.
Exactly. And this what's really exciting is that the research that we're doing back and forth is contributing to each other's writings. Mount Hermon...
Our dachshund is heading this way.
Yes, that's...
No, I wrote that.
It's one of the things we don't have to deal with at Skywatch TV is the dachshund needing to go outside.
We only have to deal with Josh Peck, who occasionally needs to go outside, but, you know, for the most part, he's housebroken.
Toss him a few snacks and he's fine. So... The explorer Sir Charles Warren, who you brilliantly woven into the plot of the Red Wing Saga, was dispatched by the Palestine Exploration Fund in 1869, and on September 15th of 1869 he climbed to the summit of Mount Hermon, and there he found the temple, which was dated to about the Roman period, maybe the Greek period a little earlier, probably the Greek period because of what he found inside. But that temple called Kasr Antar is the highest man-made place of worship on the planet. Why would you put one there on top of a mountain? That's 9,200. It's only accessible for a few months out of the year because of the snow that falls on the summit of Mount Hermon. It, I believe, is because that's, according to the Book of Enoch, where the watchers, the angels, came down in the days of Jared, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Does that really mean days of the patriarch Jared? I think not.
No, it's deeper than that.
It's deeper
it?
Than that, yeah. Right. Anyway, they made a mutual pact to corrupt humanity by taking wives and intermingling their seed with that of the human race. Well, Warren also found a stela that we've talked about, which is...
the stone marker.
Right. An inscription in archaic Greek that said, those who swore an oath by the order of the Most High and Holy God, those who swore an oath proceed from here. Well, that, of course, refers to the Watchers, and scholars of Enochic literature agree that that's what it refers to. Now, this is inscribed in Greek, so it's probably not any older than Alexander the Great, which was 4th century B.C. Mm-hmm. He conquered the Levant in the 340s, 330s B.C. So, but Warren also found, leading up to the summit, a much older stone wall that forces those who wanted to approach the summit to pour out a drink offering into the summit, which has been scooped out to receive those offerings, to approach it with the summit always on the left. So you're approaching it in a counterclockwise fashion. Now, this connects to a couple of other rituals that continue to this present day. First was the circumambulation of the fields as part of a ritual called the Akitu at the ancient city of Ur. Ur was in southeastern Iraq. We have probably heard it described as Ur of the Chaldees or Chaldeans.
Doesn't Ur simply mean city?
City, it does.
So city of the Chaldees.
Right. And of course, in the Neo-Babylonian period, which was about the time of, well, Nebuchadnezzar, the Chaldeans were the court magicians and sorcerers and so forth.
So this was the city of the magicians.
By the time of Nebuchadnezzar, yes.
By the way, we've already decided that's a book title, so if you're thinking, hey, great book title, we've already done that.
Yeah.
It's coming.
Yeah, Tyler Quayle, we're looking at you.
He's already got the website. I know he does.
Yes. But this practice of walking in a circle around something in order to perform a ritual and win the favor of the gods, to bless something or protect something, goes as far back as the middle of the third millennium BC. So we're talking 2500 BC or 2000 years before Nebuchadnezzar and the Chaldeans of Babylon, which is not really close to Ur, by the way. That's several hundred miles away. They were performing this ritual at Ur, which was the city of the moon god, by the way, which has another connection we'll get to in just a second here. But that circumambulation was known, has been known to people of the West for the last 1400 years, because that is a ritual connected to the Kaaba in Mecca. And so Sir Charles Warren, in writing his report for the Palestine Exploration Fund in 1870, said, you know, I wonder if this is connected to the, and I forget the word in Arabic, but anyway, the word that they used to describe that ritual circumambulation of the Kaaba, which is the big black stone in Mecca. But he did say something I was not aware of, that the Pasha, or not the Pasha, but the Grand Mufti in Jerusalem that he had met during his travels, told him that according to their legends, there were five stones from five sacred mountains in the Kaaba. Mount Ararat, where Noah's Ark landed, of course, Mount Carmel, Jabal al-Nur, which was where Muhammad received his visitation, the Mount of Olives, and Mount Hermon.
Ah.
So Warren wondered whether that was a connection between this ritual approach to pour out a drink offering in the summit of Mount Hermon and this ritual at the Kaaba, which connects, you know, through the moon god, because the moon god was the preeminent deity, and that's the next book I'm working on, by the way, is all about this, was the preeminent deity in ancient Mesopotamia for the Amorites who founded Babylon, but also the Arabian tribes long into the Christian era, down to the time of Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
The moon god was preeminent. So this practice of this circumambulation, which we can document all the way back to ancient Ur, possibly stems from the original rebellion on Mount Hermon.
And getting back to, you said in the days of Jared, that has to do with the moon god, doesn't it?
Well, it has to do with a ritual that a scholar named Edward Lipinski called, or he didn't call it this, but he pointed out in an article about Mount Hermon and its connection to a deity called the god, El, to the Canaanites. But El was also known to other ancient cultures. He was Enlil to the Sumerians. He was Dagon in what is now the center of Syria, the core of the Islamic State's territory recently. He was also known as Cronos to the Greeks, Saturn to the Romans, Baal Haman to the Phoenicians. This was a god who demanded human sacrifice. As Baal Haman, the sacrifice of children. As Saturn, the sacrifice of gladiators in the gladiator games. As Cronos, children and adults at a festival called the Cronia, which was the precursor to Saturnalia. Dagon, whose one of his epithets was Bel Pagre, which means Lord of the Corpse. And El, who ruled on Mount Hermon with his 70 sons, who represented the 70 gods of the nations, or the gods of all the nations, which overlooked Bashan, which was known in the ancient world as the entrance to the underworld. This deity has a dark connection to the underworld in every iteration, every manifestation. Even Enlil, according to the Babylonian Enuma Elish, which was their creation myth, wanted to destroy humanity by sending a global flood because we kept him awake at night with all our noise. So this was a god who demanded sacrifice but would not shy away from just wiping everybody clean because we ruined his sleep.
Okay, so we're not going to deny that the flood happened. We all know it happened.
Right.
But we're going to say it was someone other than Yahweh who did it.
Right.
In fact, we're going to give him a different name. So what we're going to see to propagandize you with is that Yahweh, whom we call Enlil, he did this because you guys were too noisy.
Right, right.
It's your fault.
Mm-hmm. And I think there
not
are...
Not ours.
Exactly, yeah.
Not we watchers it who it came down.
Yeah, our rebellion had nothing to do with it. Don't look over here.
In fact, we're your friends.
Right.
Enki is your friend.
Right, Enki, the Lord of the Abyss. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's the good guy. The key, well, let's tease ahead through the break because I think there's an even stronger connection between that aspect of the god, his connection to Greek mythology through Cronos, the Watchers, and one of the biggest, I think, shall we say, threats to the West, to our world today. And we'll talk about that. And again, this is documented through secular scholarly research.
Well, let's go ahead and take that break so we can dig back in.
Yeah, so more ahead as we look at the origin of the rebellion against Yahweh and how it affects you today when Sci-Friday continues after this.
Tens of thousands of people nationwide are scrambling to be the first one to solve the new Belly of the Beast Grand National Challenge Contest. Now is your chance to win big by undertaking a search for the answer to the most explosive discovery in the history of the United States and biblical prophecy. One fortunate winner able to crack the Belly of the Beast contest anagram will walk away with $10,000, while 10 runner-ups will receive shopping sprees worth up to $500 each at the Skywatch TV store just in time for Christmas. Contest participants will discover what's never been revealed before. Why a Bible is bound in a magic square inside the testes of the Washington Monument. Where and why a buried ancient magical obelisk awaits underground nearby. Where the entrance to a secret crypt exists, connected to American Lucifer worship from within the deep state. And for the first time ever, the U.S. government-owned location where the Antichrist will be resurrected on American soil. To learn these astonishing secrets, a series of codes will be posted for 3 weeks at SkywatchTV.com starting November 20 and leading up to the posting of an anagram on December 11. The first person to decipher the anagram and call the phone number provided will be the grand prize winner. Now's your chance to win $10,000 or be one of the 10 runner-ups to receive shopping sprees at the Skywatch TV store for books, DVDs, special packages, long-term storage food, survival supplies, and so much more. To learn how you can participate in the new Belly of the Beast Grand National Challenge Contest, visit skywatchtv.com/contest now.
Cutting-edge analysis of end times prophecy on the very ground where it all unfolds. It's the Skywatch TV Wars of the Gods Tour of Israel, May 12th through 23rd, 2019, hosted by Derek and Sharon Gilbert, and Pastor Carl Gallups, best-selling author of Gods and Thrones and Gods of Ground Zero, Messianic Rabbi Zev Perot of Messiah of Israel Ministries, and filmmakers Justin and Wes Fall, producers of the Hollow Earth Chronicles. This is a once-in-a-lifetime tour of the Holy Land from Mount Hermon to the Dead Sea. You'll walk in Jesus' footsteps on the battlegrounds of the supernatural war with preaching and teaching along the way. Shiloh, Bethel, Mount Carmel, Nazareth, the Jordan River, the Mount of Olives, Sea of Galilee, the Garden of Gethsemane, and Jerusalem, where the final battle will be fought for God's Mount of Assembly, Zion. The Skywatch TV Wars of the Gods Tour of Israel. Reserve your place now. For information and registration, log on to LipkinTours.com. That's LipkinTours.com.
Welcome back to Sci Friday from Skywatch TV. Derek and Sharon Gilbert operating from our home studio
secret
today.
Bunker on the ridge.
That's exactly right.
By the way,
right.
If you look in the window, you can see the ridge behind us and the cows. May or may not be out there. It's hard to say. By the way, in case you're wondering, this is a photograph that was just barely, you know, tweaked in Photoshop of my mother when she was in her 20s.
She's beautiful. She looks like a movie star.
I know, doesn't she?
Well, I can see where you get it then.
Aw, you cutie pie. want to remind you really briefly, for a $50 donation, you get all the stuff you see right here. You get the four books that are currently out of the Red Wing Saga. Book 5 will be out, I hope, at Christmas. You also get two of Derek's first books, the one about UFOs, you know, aliens are coming, and of course The Great Inception, which is absolutely where you have to start if you want to understand the things he's talking about today. And you also get the Sci Friday Collector's Edition. You want this because we've only got literally dozens left. That's it. So call right away to the SkywatchTVStore.com or go online at SkywatchTVStore.com. I just can't get it all in because it's so exciting.
Yes.
And if all you need is just Realms of Stone, you can get that for a $20 donation and still get the goodies that are extra.
Yeah.
And the magazine.
That's right. Oh, and
yeah,
this month's magazine, we've got a tease of what we just teased there in the break, the Belly of the Beast, and of course the contest connected to the release of that new documentary, Wes Fall and Justin Fall.
And they're going to be with us in Israel, those two young men. And you want to go because we were standing right there beneath the peak of Mount Hermon.
Right.
Near that, we stood in the Grotto of Pan. These places are real, and we're going to visit them again.
Yeah, and you can join us there next May. So LipkinTours.com for more information and to get your reservation.
So tell us more.
Well, the again, this ancient deity, this god, Kronos, Saturn, El, Baal Hamon, Dagon, Enlil, all one and the same, all with connections one way or another to the underworld, all with connections one way or the other regarding the sacrifice of humans, except maybe for the Canaanite god El. But even then, because of his connection to Mount Hermon and its links to the underworld through Bashan and, of course, the Grotto of Pan at the base on the southwestern side, which was believed to be the entrance to the netherworld, pagans would toss their sacrifices in, and if they sank, the god of the grotto would accept it. If not, then the god rejected it. So this was connected to a very evil place. In fact, in the Amorite dialect called Ugaritic, Bashan was pronounced Bathan, which literally means place of the serpent. So there's these dark connections there. But because Kronos and the Titans and Saturn and with his rebellion and overthrowing the sky god, again, I think, which is a twisting of real history that they wanted to pass along to pagans, we destroyed the creator, the sky god, the god of heaven, the god who is named heaven, in fact, in Roman and Greek mythology. Uranos means heaven. Not only destroyed him, but castrated him, which, you know, you don't need to think very hard about the symbolism of what that is supposed to mean. That was the lie that they perpetuated, and I think it's because they are to be equated with the Watchers who sinned by coming down on Mount Hermon. In other words, Kronos, Saturn, was the leader, I think, of the Watchers, Semayaza, who led that rebellion, and like the Watchers, Saturn, Kronos, Dagon, even the Hurrian and Hittite version of this god named Kumarbi, all, even Enlil, remembered as being at some point in history condemned to the netherworld, the underworld. So I think that is the connection there. But here's the thing, and the reason why this is relevant to us today is because
getting back to Halloween and the whole...
Right. This fascination with the dead and this cult of the dead and the worship and veneration of the dead, which led Israel into trouble. You remember that while they were camped in the plains of Moab, God sent a plague that destroyed 25,000 Israelites. It was because, according to Psalm 106, that the veneration of dead, eating sacrifices offered to the dead, is part of the worship of a god called Baal Peor, which means Lord of the entrance to the netherworld. That was why God sent this plague. So this was a long snare, and the book Last Clash of the Titans goes into why. The Canaanites, their neighbors, mm-hmm. the pagans, venerated the spirits of the dead, the Rephaim, the mighty men who were of old, who the Greeks and Romans venerated as their demigod heroes, their ancestors, Hercules and Odysseus and Theseus and so on. But scholars for many years, going back to the first iteration of this god, Enlil, who was the king of the Sumerian pantheon until he was replaced by Marduk, the chief god of Babylon. Enlil, for many years, scholars thought was a compound word, En meaning Lord, and Lil meaning wind or ether, so Lord Wind or Lord mm-hmm. Storm or whatever.
Sam is slowly making his way across the kitchen floor.
He's our timer. He's got a built-in clock. You know, German engineering.
Hurry up.
Yeah. So Enlil, Lord Wind, but scholars have made a really good case just recently now that that etymology, the origin of that word, is not really correct. That really, it probably comes from Akkadian, which is a Semitic language related to Hebrew, Il-Ili, meaning God of Gods, Il-Ili.
That makes more
sense. Or Il-Ilu. And of course, that would make sense then when you equate Enlil with El, because Il, El, very close, mm-hmm. just a slight difference mm-hmm. in the vocalization. And what it means is the God, Il-Ili, mm-hmm. or Il-Ilu, God of Gods, the God, over time it become Il-Ilu, or Il-Allah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. Allah.
Exactly.
The God.
Exactly. And you get into that a little bit in Last Clash of the Titans,
a little
but
bit.
You're really getting into it
the
in
focus is in the new
Bad
book.
Moon Rising next
right.
year.
Right. So there's a book that'll be coming out next year, Defender Publishing, and it goes into that, but also the importance of the moon god, which I think is really understated. There are some key confrontations in the Bible that are clearly directed at the moon god, but when you look at the way Islam has been has interacted with the rest of the world for the last 1400 years, I think you see manifestations, or rather characteristics, of the main, I think, I'm going to argue, five main deities from ancient Mesopotamia who were rebels. The god, this mm-hmm. Enlil, El, Dagon, Saturn, Kronos, the storm god, which goes, you know, Baal, Zeus, Jupiter, the goddess of sex and war, Inanna, Ishtar, Aphrodite, Venus, Astarte in the Bible, the sun god, Shamash, was, you know, that was, he was the lawgiver, very legalistic. You have to do all of these things mm-hmm. in order to be, and the moon god, who again was really important. I mean, the moon god was named Sin, and it was Mount Sinai, where Moses got the law. I mean, the Bible says it was the mountain of God, but God, Elohim, in the Bible can be singular, in Hebrew, can be singular or plural.
Yes.
Which God? I mean, we assume it was the mountain of God, the mountain of Yahweh. I'm going to argue that Yahweh basically came into the moon god's mountain there in the middle of the Arabian desert and said, I'm taking this.
Well, the symbol, one symbol of the moon god is the bull. Or
yeah,
calf.
Right, because of the crescent, which
so
looks like horns.
So when Moses came down from the moon god's mountain,
right, and they
not
were worshiping
a surprise, exactly.
Golden calf, exactly.
It makes a
right.
lot of sense now.
Yes. Also, interestingly, and I do go into this in Last Clash of the Titans, there's a lot of bull or bison imagery connected to these old gods. You remember the king who rebelled against the son of Solomon, Jeroboam, set up golden calves at Bethel and Dan, both of which we will visit in Israel next year, by the way. That calf, you might think, okay, well, maybe it's the moon god again, but one of the epithets of the god, El, is bull, El. And a scholar has looked at some of the verses in the Bible related to that golden calf at Bethel, Hosea 8:6, I believe, is the verse, and said, you know, if you regroup the letters in Hebrew, because there's no vowels, you actually come up with a sentence that makes more sense than what's in the Bible. The verse reads, "For from Israel," literally. For from Israel, a craftsman made it. Whereas if you regroup it, it says, for it is bull El, a craftsman made it, You know, essentially, explaining that this was the worship not of an idol that represented Yahweh, but a representation of the chief god of the pagan neighbors of Israel, trying to extend his influence from Mount Hermon south into Israel.
I want to get this back to the idea of the rituals around Halloween, and that go back many thousands of years. There are two seasons in a pagan calendar that are very important, in the spring and in the fall. And that's throughout all civilizations.
Right.
And it has to do with this idea of grain gods and the flooding of the fields and this and that. The belief is that the veil thins at both of these seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the time that you can make requests from the gods, the time when the gods can interact with us and cross over. Really briefly, in the 2 minutes we've got left, talk about these gods that cross over.
That was reference in Canaanite or Amorite literature to the Rephaim. The Canaanites knew who the Rephaim were. They venerated them. They would summon them to ritual meals, and they were called travelers in the Rephaim texts.
Which is Ovarim.
Yes, Ovarim, in the sense they traveled from one plane of existence to another.
Mm-hmm.
And there are places...
I guess it's Ovarim.
Ovarim in Hebrew, but in the Ugaritic it's Ovarim.
Yeah.
Point being, they understood that these spirits crossed over and interacted with humans. It's just that in the Canaanite religion, the Amorite religion, these ancestors of what they believed were their ancestors, had to be appeased, venerated, worshipped, sacrificed to, and summoned through necromancy rituals.
Oh, now it's starting to make sense. Our current day rituals that in many ways in the Western civilization only go back maybe 500, 600 years. These are all about appeasing these creatures that might be coming over, isn't it?
Yes, yes. And this goes back way, way back. This goes back to ancient Sumer, you know, to the very dawn of written records, and probably much, much farther than that.
Oh, my goodness.
And it
this
all
is
stems
really
from the Nephilim.
And is some of this in Last Clash of the Titans?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's the main
theme
of the book.
There's a great deal on that, by the way, Last Clash of the Titans, and you need to contact Skywatch TV Store and ask about that. I think it's a bunch of stuff for $35 donation.
Yeah, yeah. That book and more, the new books by Carl Gallops and Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis as well. So very quickly, I want to plug my podcast, which is going live on the air on Sunday nights, live through the internet on Sunday nights. It's called A View from the Bunker, which happens to be the next room over here. And this week...
We're turning our house into a studio.
Yes. 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time. That's UTC minus 6. The guest this week is Doug Woodward talking about his new book, Rebooting the Bible. The current episode is Josh Peck and Stephen Bankars talking about their book, Second Coming of the New Age.
So you can listen live, or you can go into the archives, and you can get that at Spreaker.com. And you can look for View from the Bunker, VFTB, or you can download the app.
Yes. And
that's
our timer,
rule.
Yes.
So stop. We're out of time.
It's not going to stop until we... I think we're going to have to break it. Well, thank you for watching as we keep watch. With Sharon Gilbert, I'm Derek Gilbert. And this is Sci Friday from Skywatch TV.
It's an emergency.